Hello, I'm Costa Constanti, and welcome to Terra Nullius Cyprus. Terra Nullius means uninhabited land, which for me has a double meaning. It represents the buffer zone in Cyprus, where my family's from, that separates the island in two, and one of the unfortunate descriptions of Australia by the first European settlers, ignoring the fact that the world's oldest culture existed there, Australia's First Nations Indigenous communities from 60,000 years ago. Through my podcasts, I remind listeners that Cyprus, like Australia, is very much alive, populated, and fascinating. Speaking of fascinating, I'd like to introduce listeners to interesting people living in Cyprus, all over the island, north, south, east, and west, as well as Cypriots of the diaspora. People who are working on interesting things, have something to contribute to society, they're creating, they're artistic, or they're helping to promote human rights, or Cyprus's history and culture, the unknown facts of our island, and so forth. As my first guest of Terra Nullius Cyprus series, I want listeners to meet Magda Zenon. Magda is a good friend, I have to be transparent, but more than that, she's an inspiration. She was one of, if not the first, podcasters in Cyprus. Magda, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Costa, for honouring me with the first episode, and yes, we're good friends, but that doesn't mean we're not honest friends. So fire ahead.
And look, I must admit, it's an honor to have you on the podcast because you obviously have been one of the first podcasters on the island, if not the first. I've listened to many of your shows. They're amazing. They're excellent. They're very interesting to listen to. You do wonderful work introducing the island to the women of Cyprus, introducing the women of Cyprus to the world, I should say.
Exactly.
Speaking of around the world, I'm going to dive just straight in. What I don't like people doing is when they give a CV of the person you're talking to. I don't like to work like that. What I do want to do, though, is just ask you some questions, break the ice, get the listener to know you before we move on. I know that you lived in South Africa.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about that. What were you doing there?
I was born and brought up in South Africa. South Africa is very much part of who I am. I was used to diversity. Mm-hmm. I also grew up in the dark years of apartheid, and from a very young age, remember being outraged by the separation and the lack of human rights, and very in awe of the fact that my parents allowed me to be outraged.
Oh, excellent. So you had the support of your parents to be open-minded.
Not the support, but they stepped back, okay? They probably recognized the passion, but they couldn't stop me. The only thing they wanted for me was to be safe because we're talking about a police state.
What city were you in?
Johannesburg. So I was in the that was the Soweto riots, the left-wing universities, which means there were troubles on the university. So it's very much part of who I am, the colors, the smells.
Okay. Well, let's take a step further back. How did your parents end up in South Africa? Where are they from?
My father's from Strovelos, and my mother's, she's also a Nicosian. She's family house was in Ayos Antonios. My father emigrated to South Africa in 1939. And then after the war came back to find a local bride.
After World War?
Yes, after World War II.
World War II.
Came back to find a bride and found my mum.
And then took her as a souvenir
just graduated from Pan Cypriot High School in downtown Nicosia. Top of her class.
Ah, she finished her high school studies. Excellent.
Top of her class in maths and English, in maths and history, but maths was her forte.
I can already see the seeds of who Magda is coming through from your mother. I mean, not that many women back in those days finished high school all the way, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, both my grandparents finished high school.
Oh.
My father, my grandfather and my mother said, worked at the land registry, spoke Greek, Turkish. He spoke a few languages, English, very well respected. He was a government servant. My grandmother had finished high school because her father had finished as a pharmacist. On my father's side, my grandmother had finished high school, and my grandfather was a mukhtari when the kids were young, and he was also the teacher at the high school. So I come from an urban background.
Okay,
My mother, top of her class, finished 3 months later at the age of 18, on a boat to South Africa.
What did she do when she got to South Africa? Did she work?
She worked with my dad.
What did he do?
He had a restaurant.
Okay. So they ran the restaurant together. Yes. Okay. And then you were born into that environment?
Absolutely.
Did you work the restaurant?
Yes, we all did. All three of us did.
What kind of restaurant? Greek?
No, mainly for seafood.
Okay.
Mainly seafood, but always touches of my mum, because my mum was, even today, even though she passed in 98, people still remember how well she cooked.
Okay.
She cooked Japanese, Chinese, French, Cypriot, anything. I think it was her therapy.
Now I think I know why we get along so well when it comes to sharing a plate of food.
Exactly. We like a good plate of food.
You've had some experience with Asian, it sounds, but yeah. So, okay, so then you were born and raised in South Africa. How old were you when you left South Africa?
I left at the age of 27.
And you went to?
Greece.
And why'd you go to Greece?
I married a Greek, for what it's worth, for all my sins. I married a Greek.
And where did you live in Greece?
Rhodes.
Okay, interesting
my
island.
My ex-husband is a Thessaloniki.
Mm-hmm.
He worked on Rhodes, and in the winters we either spent in Thessaloniki or he also had a job in Chicago.
So you used to go to Chicago?
Yes, in the winter. Am I crazy or what?
Yeah, no, I've never spent winter in the continental U.S., in northern USA, but no, I don't think I could do that. No,
you get used to it, but
no.
It's cold. It's cold.
I can't handle the heat. I can't handle the cold. So I don't know what I would do in that area of the world.
No.
So, okay, so now you were in Greece. Were you coming to Cyprus with him?
I've always been... I always had strong family ties, mm-hmm. very sense of loyalty. I used to nurture relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Even in South Africa, when my father's or mother's cousins used to arrive, I used to talk to them. I used to chat with them. I'd go and visit them. When I came to Cyprus, I'd do the same thing. So when I lived in Rhodes, because Rhodes was so close, I'd come regularly.
Yeah.
Sometimes with him, usually without him, because I'd come in the summer.
Could you come to Cyprus from Rhodes directly, or did you have to go through
Absolutely.
Athens?
Absolutely. There was a boat.
There was a boat back then?
Yes, the boat would start at Piraeus, Rhodes, and then Limassol.
Okay, so you were lucky in the sense, back in those days, there was that direct connection. Now Rhodes is further than ever.
I know.
Yeah.
And at that stage, when you got onto the boat in Piraeus, you couldn't separate the Rhodites from the Cypriots because the dialect is so similar.
Well, there's a village in Rhodes, if I'm not mistaken, where they speak...
Archangelos.
Yes.
Yes.
Is it true that there are diasporan Cypriots that went there centuries ago? Or?
I don't know what what it is, but there they speak it more. But a lot of the words are Cypriot. The J, they don't use the G.
Well, it makes sense because the Venetians had Rhodes, if I'm not mistaken.
It's so, the same. Yeah. And it's on the route.
Yeah, so it would make sense that you'd have a population of Cypriots up themselves from Cyprus and on the way to Venice, wherever they'll go, maybe dump a mob of people in Rhodes and... That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I wonder if they're aware of the Cypriot ancestry.
No, they are, because they get told it very often. Not by me, but they get told it very often that it's very similar.
Yeah, talk about identity crisis. I mean, we have an identity crisis in Cyprus. Imagine these guys.
But I loved Greece. Greece is very much my spiritual home.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Greece. And despite the fact that I left in 2000,
mm-hmm.
which I still have a lot of strong ties to friends I made there, my marriage might have dissolved, but I still have very strong ties to the people I made friends with. And it's very much part of who I am.
These friends are in Rhodes as well?
Yes.
Okay. So you go there regularly still?
Not regularly, but I speak regularly because I also remember birthdays and name days, and I'll pick up the phone.
And it's easier today more than ever to stay in touch with people. So, yeah.
So Greece is very much part of, and even with my in-laws.
Okay.
I still have a very close tie to them, and I do love Greece, although I'm glad I moved to Cyprus.
Tell me why.
Well, I left as a single parent, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I left the marriage. I had a young child of 5 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
In all bad marriages, regardless of who's to blame, I felt I needed to leave the space. So I came to Cyprus because my father's sister was unmarried, had a very good relationship with her. I was always her favorite. And when we spoke, she actually came to visit me just before I left. She had lost my father and her other brother. Mm-hmm. So I told her to pack her bags and come spend time. Then she had said to me, do what you need to do, but if you need a place to stay, my house is a space for you and your son for as long as you want.
Okay.
So that's why I came to Cyprus. It's a blessing. If you know what it's like being a single parent, it's a blessing to coming out of a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
To know that you don't have to worry about rent, to know you've got someone to protect you. So that's why I came. And it also was easy access for my ex-husband, should he want to keep a relationship with his son.
Okay. Which is fair. So, okay, so you plonked yourself in Cyprus. You're raising your son here as a single mother. His father comes ad hoc. Don't need to go into the relationship details. I assume you found work?
Well, actually, at the serendipity, this was serendipity because everything worked in a week. Within a week, I had a job, a school for my son, and a car.
Within a week?
Within a week.
This is going back how many years?
2000. And the strange thing is that before I left, a cousin of mine who I no longer have, a cousin's husband, the dad, had actually promised me a job.
Okay.
And 2 days before I was due to get on that boat, he called me up to say the job's cancelled. Okay? So I called my other aunt, my mother's sister, and I said, you know what, so-and-so is happening because she's got quite a well-connected son-in-law. Let people know that I'm looking for a job. And my aunt says to me, you know, I'm really amazed at the fact that you haven't stopped a beat. Good. I said to her, I've got to come. So tell people, you know, and when I landed, a day later, there was an interview, or 2 days later, I had an interview, and I got the job.
What was the job?
It was a new newspaper that was launching, English-speaking newspaper, okay. Which was ideal.
Yep.
Because it meant immediately I had to learn the landscape.
Yep. And that was a good inroad to become
total good inroad.
A good way to become a local.
Exactly. And I immediately picked up human rights. I immediately picked up women's rights.
Okay, no, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's actually a good segue to where I wanted to go with this. I've known you for so many years now, and I've known that you've been quite the activist, whether it's women's rights, human rights in general, whether it's bicommunalism and peace building. I know you're involved with Hands Across the Divide. I know that, was it last year or the year before? When was it that you went to New York?
I didn't go to the virtual round table.
I was virtual.
Yes.
Oh, you went to New York.
Yes.
So, I mean, I know that you've represented the island on the international stage, and that doesn't come out of nowhere. I mean, like, yes, you have the personality, you're dynamic, you're switched on, you're cluey, you're friendly, you're very smart.
I work on my networking.
You're a good networker.
We like you.
Thank you. Good networkers. So you chose your power for good. You chose to help others, let's say, and you chose to focus on women. Tell me a little bit about Kaleidoscope.
Well, Kaleidoscope, I would say, was a turning point in my life because I'd been involved in women's rights and founding and still active in a lot of organizations. And then, for those that remember, there was the Cyprus Community Center in the buffer zone whose intention it was to create media for stuff that was happening throughout the island, either between the both communities or separately, but to inform. I was on the board, and in 2013, they launched a community radio station. Then I have to say they brought an Indian woman, Archana Kapoor, who's got a community radio program in Delhi, and she said one thing to me in the meeting that resonated. She said to me, radio worked in India and gave a voice to women because you didn't need to see a face.
Right.
Okay, and so they offered me a show because I did women's rights. And I thought, you know what? What's the worst thing that can happen? It doesn't work. I worried about being able to stay on target in terms of conversation and how many people I could get to speak. And I started off doing random things about women, but ultimately I found my voice. I found that there were a million people out there that were, women especially, dying to talk because mainstream media was not giving them a space.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I focused on women in peace building in all its form because I don't believe peace is just at the negotiating table.
Correct.
Peace is everything we do every day. And it's often done more by women than men. Mm-hmm. So it's what you do in your family. It's what you do with your neighbor, what you do at work. And I focused on women in peace building. And because we're a small island, there's a limit to how many women I can speak to locally or how many times I can speak to the same woman that I ventured abroad. So it actually, to me, it's the one thing in my life that I learned a lot. Every conversation I had, I learned at least one thing. I learned one thing, okay? So it fine-tuned my thinking. And I think the one thing I did do that I'm quite proud of is that it wasn't having Kaleidoscope per se, but the fact that once a week, because I was on the air once a week for about 7 years,
Yep.
Is I was actually flooding Facebook with photographs because I'd put Jane Doe, who's an activist, and there would be a picture of her. And it wouldn't just be one picture. I'd put it on Twitter and on Facebook, and I would spread it across groups. So I was actually changing the way the things that were being put online about women.
So, yeah, you're basically enhancing women's presence.
Exactly.
In the internet.
Yeah.
You're exposing them to people who would not have actually seen them otherwise. Now, when you mention women from abroad, how are they received in Cyprus by the Cypriots?
To me, that wasn't an issue.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the issue was that the women abroad were actually speaking to me in Cyprus. Okay. Yep. And they were giving, they wanted to speak. I mean, I had a woman, Jodie Williams, who actually won a Nobel Prize for Peace, who had actually been to Cyprus. She had actually been to an event in the buffer zone for the nuclear bombers. To me, it was actually introducing women from abroad to Cypriots as well.
Yep. Because, I mean, look, Cypriots love to celebrate their Cypriotness abroad. Maybe not so much on the island, but when they're abroad, they want the world to learn about Cyprus. So this is an absolutely wonderful way for people to learn about Cyprus to people that matter.
Mm.
Not just tourists, not just the mainstream business world, but women that can make a difference to Cyprus as well, but the worlds they live in.
Yes, but it's making the connection as well.
Correct. It's a two-way street. So Cyprus can influence them, they can influence Cyprus. Interesting.
Or you can actually use them as a resource. Because mm-hmm. you're often having conferences or you need help.
Yep.
You pick up the telephone.
Yep.
And also one of the things where it does work is that in 2019, when they started brainstorming about creating a woman mediators across the Commonwealth network, I happened to interview one of the organizers.
Right.
And in speaking to me, she said to me, "Abba Magda, Cyprus hasn't been invited." I said, "Excuse me?"
To a Commonwealth group.
To the Commonwealth. And immediately the process started. So if I hadn't made that connection, we might not have been included.
Well, look, I think sometimes Cyprus misses out on opportunities because of our small size as well. We don't have the numbers. We don't have people in all the corners of the world. We have them in big diaspora communities like London, Melbourne and whatnot, but we don't have them everywhere. So there might be a Commonwealth meeting where they'll invite people because they know people. And in this situation, they got to know Magda, who was the conduit to link Cyprus to this Commonwealth group.
I have to admit, I sent in my name and the name of a Turkish Cypriot, hoping they would have
accepted both.
They would invite both of us.
Tell me, okay, I want to jump on this. I'm going to swing the direction of the conversation a different way now. You say that you introduced a Turkish Cypriot name as well.
Yes.
Can you think of other countries where we consciously try to introduce other community groups?
Well, I think we're quite unique.
Yeah?
I think we're quite unique. But if you look at a country like Kashmir, there are two parts of Kashmir.
Yep.
There's the Pakistani part. Yep. They both face very different difficulties.
Yep.
So when they, like in the Commonwealth that they're part of, they are two Kashmir representatives from within. Okay. But ours is quite unique, and I think ours is not as well known.
It's not as well known, but I think that's also because the fact of the matter is that we are living relatively comfortably in Cyprus. It's not a place that gathers international media attention like it did in 2013 with the haircut, for example. Yes. Like, we don't have, thankfully, we don't have violence here to the level of Kashmir, for example. Yes. We have violence. We don't have the poverty that you see in some African Commonwealth states.
This is a conversation I often have when I'm at meetings, and I say, you know what, I feel guilty about speaking because I'm not in danger. Yeah. I can walk safely in the street even at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I have a job. But then you think, I can't think of myself as an average throughout the island. Mm-hmm. And when I do introduce, because I went to another forum last year in the Maldives, of which I'm a member, the Women's Alliance of Security Leadership. And my last request, the request I made at the end of the meeting was, I would like you to invite a Turkish Cypriot member because I can speak about them, but the reality that the Turkish Cypriots live is not something I can speak about on their behalf.
Especially in the current situation in Cyprus where there are two, let's say, autonomous areas of each other.
And it's quite unique. I mean, the people don't really know that it's the one area is in limbo.
Yes.
Okay. They don't realize
people. The struggles are different.
I mean, the telephone, the fact that you and I went to Gerinia yesterday, 5 minutes into the north, and our phones didn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, these things are something that people don't understand. The fact that we have euros, the north has lira, the fact that we are 3579 and they are 009, that's a Turkish number. And the fact that it's an economy, it's not an independent economy.
Yep.
And that's why I was then asked to suggest and I sent through three names.
I think it's worth noting, I have a lot of people say to me, you know, why should the UN or why should the international community be interested in Cyprus when you have Sudan, when you have Afghanistan, when you have all these, like Syria, you have all these conflict zones around the world. Why should we focus on Cyprus? I mean, the island's not even a million people. You know,
people say that because they assume things stay the same.
Correct. And that was my next sentence and you caught me there. Because it is fragile. It can change overnight. We saw that in 1996 with the violence over in Derinyam, with the Dasos Izak.
Yes.
I mean, this was two isolated incidences that everyone all of a sudden realized that, oh, it can go off at any moment. And
I mean, even COVID, we went through COVID and suddenly
the checkpoints closed.
The checkpoints closed because our political leaders were in both communities were playing games with us.
Yeah.
I don't know who was blackmail or what. Well, but we realized how fragile it is because people's lives can be lost.
Well, it's not just that, but you need a Cyprus that's functional and somewhat at peace and perhaps even better yet reunited, because look at the migration flows today. You have Syrians coming over on boats. You have Africans coming through the north to the south. You have all these different migration flows where, as a united island, you'd be able to manage it better, whether that's to manage better integration of migrants or better processing, safety out at sea, different things. Now, when you have two jurisdictions battling each other, that can get ugly. And who suffers in the long run? I think you might remember during COVID when a boatload of Syrian migrants arrived in the south, was pushed back out, and then they ended up in the north.
Yes,
and I mean, these people suffered. I mean, because of COVID, no one wanted to touch them. They were isolated in if I remember correctly, a basketball stadium or a football field. They were isolated for a month. I happened to know somebody who had a relative in that group. And the communication was terrible because the north wasn't communicating with the south. The Greek Cypriots weren't communicating with the Turkish Cypriots. Nobody could communicate with the Syrians themselves because all their mobiles had died in the meantime.
The checkpoints were closed.
The checkpoints were closed. The UN was struggling to mediate and so was the UNHCR and whatnot. This is an example of how I'm going to – let me sound – not the word's not extremist, but let me sound idealistic – every single life matters. Now, whether it's one life or a million lives, any life matters.
Any life.
If we can't get it right for that one single person that's suffering or having a hard time, then we can't get it right for anyone. That's the way I see it. So if we can't get it right in Cyprus, how can we get it right in Sudan or Syria?
And I think the thing that we also need to recognize is that we are a member of the EU, but our green line is a grey area, which means somewhere it stops.
Yes.
Somewhere it's also an insecurity because if you take another issue, trafficking.
Yes.
There's
Thank you.
Directives on the south with trafficking and some kind of control. That does not happen in the north.
Correct. Under whose jurisdiction
Exactly. So we need to realize that every problem, every country has a problem at its level. It doesn't make it lesser or greater.
Correct. And I mean, we need to be fair. We need to be fair to ourselves as well. I mean, we live here.
Yes, we do. Oh, and it's the fluidity around you. I mean, it's the fluidity that worries me. I mean, I've got a son of 28. This is not a promising job market.
No.
So if we actually can create a reunited island and minimize the use of money on civil servants, on duplication of administrations or services, maybe we can come up with a better plan to help the youth and create job opportunity. it'll certainly be safe. It'll certainly be more attractive for investors.
Look, I think you don't need to convince me that Cyprus has the potential to be a phenomenal place. It can be the Switzerland of the Eastern Mediterranean. It can be the Dubai of Europe. I mean, well, maybe not the Dubai of Europe. Okay. I don't know if we want to go there. But it has the potential. We're a smart population. We're educated. There is money. There is governance. There is EU facilities and whatnot. It's maybe we get into a bit of a comfort zone where we just like to take it island pace.
Yes.
Which is fine to a point, but do we not want the best for ourselves and our kids?
I mean, I look at the kids around me and I think, you know what? And my son gets really angry with me. Mm-hmm. And he's not right to be angry. He's right to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be angry with me, because how much can I do? But you look around that these peers, the kids that are doing well, the kids that have either finished private schools and have gone to good universities and have stayed away, the kids that have got parents with a family business, or the kids that are well connected. An ordinary kid like my son doesn't have a lot of hope.
Right. Is this why we're losing a lot of our students, let's say, to the outside markets?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. And when they give us the unemployment figures, they're not counting the kids that went to study.
We're not counting immigration.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that's a huge problem. On across the island, I mean, the amount of students I know that aren't coming back, it's scary. It's sad. It's a brain drain.
It is a brain drain.
It's a brain drain. Well, I should say it's not a brain drain. It's a lack of brain gain. Because they're already overseas studying, so they didn't study here and then lose. Yeah.
So and they haven't contributed yet.
Correct, yeah. And look, at the end of the day, somebody that comes back to Cyprus and works, what are they doing? They're paying taxes. They're contributing. They're developing the island.
I mean, I'm looking at my son. He's earning a salary now, mm-hmm. and it's seasonal because it's, I think, in the region of about 900.
No.
His girlfriend's earning something similar. How are they going to move in together?
No. How can they afford property?
Not even property. Look around you and the rent... goodish place is around 600 euros.
Yeah.
Forget the taxes. Electricity, telephones, food, insurances.
Well, and you know, to be really honest with you, it's not so much for me right now. I wouldn't say it's the salary that's the biggest problem. I mean, it is a huge problem, obviously, but it's the lack, it's underemployment, meaning that I've educated myself and I am an archaeologist. And I'm working instead as a admin officer.
And there's very little chance of development within what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But to me, that's the... And we do know that if we put ourselves together,
mm-hmm.
there's got to be a way that we can actually create, instead of wasting all this money on defense and sending kids to the army to do nothing and having people spending money on projects in reconciliation and peace building, that money could be better served in... creating job opportunities, supporting startups.
Yeah. It could be a center.
Allowing people to leave, retire earlier so that jobs can be emptied and younger people can take new jobs. There's a lot of things you can do, but we're living in a climate that nurtures conflict and division.
Clientelism.
Yes.
Nepotism.
Exactly.
Oh, we could throw all the positive words out there.
Corruption.
Well, there's a reason why we're still in Cyprus, though.
The reason why, at my age, I wouldn't leave.
No?
This is home. Yeah. I'm too old to leave. Where am I going to go?
No, you're not too old to leave. But like you said, though, this is home. It's a beautiful place. Yes. We love it. It's ours. Cyprus is ours.
Yes.
We're Cyprus. You know, I want to change direction again. I want you to give yourself, your younger self, one piece of advice. You've got a little time machine. You can send a message back to yourself, let's say 30 years ago. What would you say? Putting you on the spot.
Well, the one thing that I could have done differently is actually find a job or open something of my own that I love. Because at this stage, I've got a job that pays the rent. And the things that I love are mostly volunteer. So the 30 years ago, I would have said to myself, look at jobs within your scope, the things that you love.
Yeah.
Don't settle and learn another language. Those are the things I would have said to myself. Because I actually learned German and I failed dismally. I was living in South Africa. Why the hell did I learn German and not Italian or Portuguese, which were languages that are around
me? I learned German as well in high school.
Terrible.
Absolutely useless to us now. I mean, all the Germans speak English.
No, but even as a language, it's not something, whereas I had Portuguese friends, Italian friends. Mm-hmm. If I'd learned it then, and now it would have been a lot more useful to me. And it's a language I like. German, I don't actually like. Doesn't come out easily from my own.
I think a way to summarize what you said about your advice to your previous self was love what you do and you'll never work a day in your life.
Exactly,
correct?
Exactly. Okay. Steve Jobs wasn't around then. I think he's the one that said it.
Is it him?
I think he's the one that said it.
I thought it was a much older quote. Okay, that's interesting. I never thought I'd be quoting tech giants.
Maybe someone else said it in a different way, but I've also heard it from him.
Okay. So, all right, now that's your advice to your past self. What's your advice to your future self?
Chill.
Bravo.
I mean, I've just had a mild heart attack.
Cool.
And there's nothing wrong with my heart. No damage, nothing needs to be fixed. And the only advice that the doctor gave to me was lose weight, that I should have known anyway. And he said, and manage your stress better.
We need to look after ourselves more. Because we don't.
Exactly. And especially you've got three kids, which this applies to you as well. When you're a single parent, constantly looking out for my son because there wasn't a father.
Yep.
And I've, in the process, I forgot about actually giving myself a timeout, giving myself a break and saying it doesn't matter if I'm messing up because it's the best I can do at this stage.
We're guilty of constantly kicking the can down the road and not dealing with our important issues now. Whether that's to lose weight, whether it's to get healthier, whether it's to clean up our act, whatever it is, we just keep
kicking. Whether to change job.
Yes. Very happy I've done that recently. And you have to do it because you are otherwise you are just kicking the can down the road and eventually you're going to look back and realize you've come a long way, but what have you left behind along that way? And no, I'm really glad that you've told me this off air about looking after your health and everything. I think that's important because we need Magda around. We need more Magdas.
I need me around.
Yeah.
I need me around it. And to be honest, because you don't look after yourself, and this is what I learned, is because I was getting messages from the universe. My body was telling me.
Yep. Slow down.
Slow down. I mean.
Relax. Enjoy.
3 years ago, I had a brain tumor.
Yes.
Okay. Fortunately, and the universe has been good to me, it was a benign brain tumor. In 2 weeks, it was out, and I'm fine. But the universe is telling me because the brain tumor, out of the four brain tumors like I had, three of them are women. Okay.
Are what, sorry?
Are women. They don't know what causes it, but I have to believe that it's because women are actually wired in a different way of taking on more responsibility, worrying more.
Mm-hmm.
And I started off watching my weight and then I got into my old bad habits.
Yep. It's easy to do.
Very easy to do. But this time when I actually realized that I feel so stupid, I actually had a heart attack. I knew all the symptoms.
Yeah.
And I just took an aspirin and went to sleep.
But you know what?
And I had to be dragged by a friend three times. Are you going or am I coming to pick you up? And the doctor's saying to me, you know what? I'm glad you've come now. I'm glad you're well. But you do realize you could have had a major heart attack.
And we wouldn't be here having this podcast.
Exactly.
And I wouldn't be able to reprimand you for not looking after yourself
but
better.
But we all need to reprimand each other as well.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm very grateful to my friend Maro that picked me up.
Thank you, Maro.
Thank you, Maro. I went out for dinner with her the next night and she said to me, are you mad? You're going tomorrow to the emergency room? And she called me again the next morning. She said to me, have you gone or am I coming to pick you up?
These are the kind of friends you need.
And I said, okay, no, I'm going. And if she hadn't called me, I wouldn't have gone.
Brilliant.
Exactly. So thank you to good friends, I think.
Well, let's just lighten the mood towards the end of our podcast. I want you to tell me, what is your favorite place on earth outside of Cyprus and South Africa and Greece?
Rome. Love Rome.
Really?
Endless. I could go there. I go there regularly because I'm a member of the Mediterranean Women Mediators Network.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I go back, I fall in love. Every time.
Interesting. I have a love-hate relationship with Rome. Don't know if I could go back. It just tired me. I love the buildings. I love the history. But I just wish I could do it without the people. Not the Romans themselves, but it's just so busy.
Well, I don't happen to go at very busy times. Mm-hmm. I've also been blessed because I go as part of a project.
Ah.
I stay at the best hotels.
Oh, there you go.
No, but I don't know, maybe because I've been off and maybe because the people from the network have now become family. It almost feels like going home.
Oh, I was going to say that too. This is what Sarajevo in Bosnia and Herzegovina is for me. I mean, people go, what's so great about Sarajevo?
You that's know, a city I want to go back to.
Yeah, but it's the people that make a city.
Yes.
And like, I don't have, I do now, but at the time I didn't have any friends in Rome. So Rome was just this sterile, pretty place to look at, full of people and expensive. But somewhere like Sarajevo, which isn't hot on the tourist trail, but every time I go there, it's warm, it's fun. I love the people I'm friends with there. I enjoy going back.
The only time I've been to Sarajevo, I was invited to a conference. And because of the massacre in Sarajevo, I was expecting, because I'm quite empathetic, I was expecting to go into the city and see a lot of black shadows around. Because I pick up shadows. It was actually white.
Exactly.
I don't know why. And I thought to myself, I actually kicked myself for not staying longer.
They are resilient people.
I really need to go back because I don't know what it was. There was something very mesmerizing.
Maybe we'll go together.
Yes.
Yes. No,
Since you know the place. And
I know the best cevapcici store.
Okay. I think we need to make a plan.
Speaking of cevapcici, what's your favorite food other than Cypriot?
Well, I'm quite boring. Okay.
Okay.
A toasted chicken mayonnaise will get me every time. And the only people that know how to do it well is the South Africans. I don't know if it's the bread, the mayo, or the chicken.
Is the chicken fried?
No. Oh. It's really, I don't know how they do it. I also don't mind a chicken on the grill.
Okay.
My favorite
is this the Portuguese element of South Africa?
It could have been. Yeah. Also, if I have top of the list is chips, but since having the mild heart attack, it's actually been crossed off my list.
Yeah, I must admit that's my weakness. French fries are my weakness. But anything potatoes is my weakness. Okay. Yeah.
But what I would say rather is that I will try everything. Sushi just hasn't got me. Everything else I will try because I actually enjoy a new taste because growing up in a diverse community, I love a good curry.
Yeah.
Or a nice Chinese food or a Portuguese food. Delicious. So I've learned to the variety of the cooking. Sushi doesn't do it for me.
Okay.
So I'll eat anything if you want to cook.
Okay. Well, on that note, we'll arrange that. Last question. What's your plans? What's your immediate plans for the near future, the immediate future?
Carry on because I've started quite not a strict diet, getting my eating habits into order to make sure it's a change in habit. I'm trying to reinvent myself because I'm a pensioner now.
Congratulations.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I want to find love.
Go on.
Use
the opportunity of this podcast to promote yourself.
I've been alone for very long and I've had relationships, but now that my son's really leaving and now that I see that I've got time and now that I've actually made the conscious decision that I can't fix the world and I can't be in every organization to fix it, that I've got to...
You can contribute to fixing the world.
Yeah, I can contribute, but it's not my responsibility. I do my piece. I've got to worry about me and worrying about me is also me being happy.
Mm-hmm.
And being happy would be nice to have a companion.
I think it was Mother Teresa that said that you have to be good with yourself before you can help anyone else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So to me, that's in the bigger plan of schemes, that's what I would like. And I would also like my son to be happy, but that's his responsibility.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if anyone's listening and they're interested, Magda is available. She's great fun. We love her.
Easy to please because I eat anything.
She eats anything. So the way to her is through her stomach, obviously. But no, I mean, jokes aside, I mean, leave a comment in the comments underneath this podcast if you have any ideas where Magda can meet people. Have a good time.
Or if you've got a freelance job to offer me.
Yes. Look at Magda.
Both of us.
Yes. No, great project worker. I mean, I've worked with you in the past. I've enjoyed working with you. You're confident. You're fun. You're easy to work with. You're a Southern Hemisphere folk like myself. So, look, I want to thank you so much for being in my podcast today and look forward to having you back. I look forward to being on your podcast one day. Not that I'm a woman, but I can come and talk about my...
You're a feminist.
Thank you.
Okay. And feminists need partners. It can't be done together alone.
That's true. Thank you, Magda Moore.
And I thank you, Costa Kekaliti Hig. Rock on.
Thank you.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.